Good morning, Mike Broomhead. Do you still have a mask in your car or at your desk?
I don't think so.
I think we'll have to go find one. I'm looking out the window right now thinking, I don't want to breathe that.
Yeah, I was looking. Is that from the mulch fire?
Yeah.
I didn't know where that came from this
yes.
morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty hazy
out
there.
That was a crazy fire. Did you see
it's
the
video? It's still going.
Yeah, did you see the video from yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Yeah, they have an RV storage facility right behind it. And I was watching the firefighters hose down the propane tanks or the gas tanks next to the fence.
Right.
I thought, how do you get that job? I don't want to be the guy that's got to be that close to a fire.
I'm standing there.
Yeah, no kidding. Anyway, thanks, Jamie. Good morning, everyone. Lot to talk about. Obviously, we're going to start with the debt ceiling. 1035. We'll talk about it earlier in the show, but with 1035, the superintendent of public instruction for the state of Arizona, Tom Horn, is going to join us. Big numbers in the ESA program. Immense growth. There's somewhere in the neighborhood of $900 million. One piece written says it may bankrupt Arizona. We're going to talk to him about where this money's coming from, how it's being spent, how we keep a lid on fraud and people misusing it, which you know happens in every program. But we're going to get to it. It's an important topic. It's in big news. And it looks as if the ESA program, the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, or now they're called by some people Education Savings Accounts, the ESA program or vouchers is very popular with a lot of families. So we're going to get to it. But we have to start with the debt ceiling compromise that was made. Here is just a quick report on this. Rachel Scott, ABC News.
Consider it a bipartisan debt limit breakthrough after weeks of stalled negotiations, a bitter standoff between the White House and Republican leadership. The House has officially passed a bill that would suspend the debt limit and avoid a catastrophic default with just days to spare. 314 members of the House voting for this bill that would claw back billions of dollars in unspent COVID funds and IRS funding. It would also impose stricter work requirements for some older Americans on food assistance, as well as increased defense spending. It would also cut the deficit.
So when it comes to people that voted yes or voted no on this, there were three Republicans that voted no from the state of Arizona. Congressman Biggs, a Congressman Gosar, and Congressman Crane. They voted no on this. And when you look into who else voted no on this, the Democrats that voted on it, I'm looking if there were any in Arizona that voted no as well in this list. And when you look at the list, you ask yourself, why are people against this? What was the big deal? Why are people not in favor? Well, they didn't get a lot of what they wanted. I will tell you that I agree in principle that if we are going to get our fiscal house in order, we have to do a much better job of how our government spends taxpayer dollars. There's got to be better efficiency. That's one of the things that it seems like if it's right for you in your personal life, if it makes sense most of the time, it makes sense most of the time. It's going to make sense in government. And think of another person in your life, another place in your life where you're investing money, whether it's you have someone that does investments for you or whoever it is, where you are required to give them money and they are required to take care of your money. If you were banking somewhere and they could not account for your money, you would be concerned. If they were making huge accounting mistakes, you would be very concerned about putting more money in that bank or investing more money with that person. But we continue to have a segment of our society that continues to want to raise taxes on any segment of our society or bring in more money into the United States Treasury. And there's no accountability. We know in every department, you're not going to find anyone that's a more defense oriented than I am. I believe in peace through strength. I believe we should be capable of doing very bad things and then we should control that. With that, I think that's what peace is, that people have to be fearful of what you could do, but know that you're benevolent enough to not do it. I think that's where you have peace. And I think that when you look at the government, even in the Department of Defense, there is huge redundancy. There is huge waste. They can't account for so much of the money. But I agree in principle with the lower spending, smaller government. That's just how I align myself politically. But you've got to look at the landscape of where you are. What was McCarthy going to get? Even if he could get concessions from the White House in some areas, if he got Democrats, enough people on board where, let's say there was a shift in how this vote went, where there were more Republicans that said yes because it was in it, but less Democrats that said yes, but he still got the majority in the House. How do you make it work in the Senate? And will they vote in favor of it in the Senate? And if they won't, then what's the point of what you got done in the House? You're still at loggerheads. And then it gets to the president's desk. Will he sign it? So on this deal, Chuck Schumer was talking about this and wants this to get to the president's desk right away.
There's been a very good vote in the House of Representatives. I hope we can move the bill quickly here in the Senate and bring it to the president's desk as soon as possible.
So people are saying that this is, you know, Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, said it's a good deal for America. Congresswoman, the Democrat, Jayapal, said she preferred President Biden's budget.
We could have passed the president's budget. That would have gotten us more reduction of the deficit through making the wealthiest pay their fair share.
Here we go. Another one. That's tax and spend. Let's just tax more people. We're going to reduce the deficit by taxing the American public. It's just such a ridiculous idea, and they continue to do it. But there's overwhelming support by it was a bipartisan passage. 117 people voted no. We are going to talk, I believe, tomorrow. We're trying to set it up for tomorrow with Congressman Ciscomani, Juan Ciscomani from Southern Arizona. He is a Republican that voted yes. And along like others, they're saying that it was a good first step. But this is a Republican from New York who said this is just that, a good first step.
While no deal is perfect, this is only the beginning, and we cannot allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good.
And so I will tell you, we have got a long way to go. And if you're politically aligned with me, you can't be happy with what's in here. But what you have to do now is sell this to the American people. This is where I don't understand. It's when someone is out of shape and you want to get in shape, which I've done a number of times in my life. You know, it took you a while to get out of shape. It's going to take you a while to get back. And if people don't get what they want immediately, then they quit or they're angry. And it's this way with saving money. It's the same way with a lot of different things. It took you a while to get in the bad place. It's going to take you a while to get to the good place. In this case, the variable is the American public. The Republicans have a tailwind right now going into 2024 across the country. People are upset by a lot of the things that are happening. It's not easy for them. It's not a walkover, but we're seeing more support. There's a lot less support for this president than was ever going to be imagined. Now, that could change dramatically by the election, but the president remains very unpopular within his own party. If the Republicans want to take over the Senate and they want to increase their majority in the House, if they want to take over the White House, now is the time to message what your plan is. McCarthy should be the guy they're pushing out front, and let McCarthy explain it. He's the one that did it. He brokered the deal. Now McCarthy should go out and say, here's what we got. We weren't going to get much better, but here's what we need to do. We're up against a United States Senate that is a draw, but is the majority is Democrat. It's run by the Democrats. There is no way that we are going to be able to get to where we are unless the Republicans control the Senate. Elect Republicans to the United States Senate. We need a Republican president in the White House that believes in fiscal responsibility, that doesn't think that every time you decide you want to spend more of the Americans' money, you don't have to cut from other places. You just tax the rich, and that solves everybody's problem, continuing to tax people in America. I would go out with that message all over. No one trusts the government. I would have somebody right now, if I was McCarthy, if I was Mitch McConnell, if I were any of the leaders in the Senate or the House on the Republican side, I would be out right now doing every kind of audit I could. I would want to know about every budget in every department of the federal government. I would be pointing out every ridiculous, wasteful spending program, every wasteful oversight, redundancy. And I would be saying, we have all this going on. And you want us to buy into the idea that we're going to take more money out of the general public, more money out of the discretionary income of the pockets of the American voter. I don't care who they are and how rich they are. You want to take more money from the voters in this country, and look how irresponsible we've been with the money they've already given us. Until we get this fiscal house in order, there's no way we're going to ask the American people for more money. You don't think that's a message that Americans would buy? There's always Americans that love class warfare, but it's a message that would work. We did the best we could. We slowed down the spending, but we have a long way to go. Now's when we need the help of the voters. Vote in people in our political party. We will reduce the spending, but we can't do it alone. We need help. And instead, they're talking about ousting McCarthy. I just don't get it. I don't understand that way of thinking at all. In a moment, we're going to shift local. The Phoenix has a discretionary, City of Phoenix has a discretionary budget. What's in it? Who benefits from it? And what's going to happen with it? All that's coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. We've got to talk budgets. The City of Phoenix, pay raises, homeless services, what you need to know about the Phoenix new budget. Mayor Kate Gallego, City Manager Jeff Barton have touted budget as a demonstration of the city's commitment to its employees. $6 billion budget runs July 1st through June 30th. It includes a $2 billion general fund and $134 million surplus. Police and fire take the lion's share of the general fund. We're going to talk a little bit more about recruiting in Phoenix because Phoenix PD is trying to hire over 500 cops, and it's going to take a big push to get that many people qualified for the job. But I hope they do it. They're going to see 15 and 14% increases from last year's budget. And most of the surplus will go toward employee raises, 4 to 5% ongoing pay raise plus bonuses. Let's talk about public safety. We're going to talk Phoenix PD specifically a little bit later, but I think it's important that what we should be talking about is public safety as a whole. I talk often about policing. I think it's an important part of a good, solid community. But if we don't have, the way our system is set up, if we do not have fire and rescue in the City of Phoenix, and it's not set up the right way, I want you to think about the way we are building this city now. Phoenix has always been a wide city. It hasn't been a tall city. Now we're getting to be both. Now we're starting to see in the more dense areas of Phoenix, the only place to go is up. We're seeing taller buildings, which means more people in a congested area. You're going to have more medical emergencies. But do we have enough firehouses around town in order for them to service the community? And the way the system is set up is such an incredible system of coverage, and it's almost like a defense on a football field that when one person is moving to another, if you're going to blitz from the linebacker position, someone's got to fill that gap where the linebacker was, and you got to make sure that you're still covering the field when someone leaves their position. And that's the way a good defensive coordinator looks at things. Well, the way the city has to look at things is they don't have enough firehouses, they don't have enough firefighters, they don't have enough equipment, and it's taking longer to get to calls. Plain and simple. Add traffic into all of that and all these other things that are happening. And I just look at this and I think, okay, I'm looking at the budgets and I start to see that we're being serious. The reason why this makes sense to me is because when you look around at other places and you see what's happening, you think, you know, we don't want to end up there. And I'm not trying to denigrate. I'm not trying to insult other places. But you look what's happened in San Francisco. Bad policy. Take your eye off the ball with public safety. Businesses fleeing one of the most beautiful cities in the entire country. It's a shame. Detroit's in the same position. South side of Chicago in the other position, same position. And we don't want to be there. And we can avoid it. We can avoid it in every city in this valley if we do the right things with public safety. I think it's the key to a good city. So back to policing for just a moment, that you have an area where there's very, very high crime and theft. Businesses won't invest there. You wouldn't invest there. You wouldn't take your hard-earned money and open a business in a place where you're getting robbed all the time and people are stealing from you and you know, shoplifting is happening and homeless people are sleeping in front of your business where the general public that shops is not coming in. You want to work and you want your business to be in a high traffic, if possible, people with discretionary income, parts of town. Well, that begins by ending crime. But the other part of this public safety piece, which I'm glad to see in the city's budget, is that the fire department needs to expand as well. We need more firefighters. We need more people on those rescue trucks. We need more firehouses, places so they're closer to where the calls they're running are. When you see response times, we talk a lot about policing and our response times have gone up. It's the same thing. I've had a medical emergency in my house. It is, and many of you have as well. It is a scary feeling. My mother-in-law, who has passed away, and I'm divorced now, but my former mother-in-law who passed away a few years ago, I think it was a Saturday or a Sunday morning, she had a stroke in the house. And it was one of the most helpless, terrifying times because we called 911. And we lived within 2 miles, a mile and a half, I would say, of the firehouse. And we heard the fire truck. We heard the rescue truck. We heard them leaving the fire station. That's how close they were. You could hear the sirens off in the distance. But just that short drive for them at that time, it seemed like an eternity before they got there. So this is, I know I harp on this a lot. The other thing is they're working on homeless relief and services for homeless people. Somebody was arrested at the zone yesterday when they did the cleanup. They had somebody that refused to leave and wouldn't leave their tent. And there were aid workers that were there, and he threatened them with a knife, or at least he held a knife and refused to leave the tent. They ended up having to use like pepper spray or something to get him out of the tent. And then he was taken into custody. He was arrested for threats. But the reason why I mention that is the vast majority of people yesterday accepted help. But again, having that outside of those businesses, all it takes is a violent guy like that with a knife, a guy with that kind of an attitude. So the city's got a lot of work on their hands, and it's one of the things that they did that I think they were smart about and in this budget. And we'll talk a little bit later on in the show about the fact that they've made concessions and they're going to do everything they can to get the NBA and WNBA All-Star game here. And it's a great idea. Investment in things like this and events like this are incredible. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the city of Phoenix later on in the show. Coming up next, though, Gatos joins me, and it's the BQ poll question of the day. So please stick around for it.
The Gatos Big Q poll question, brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers.
Hey, good morning, Gatos.
Good morning. Hey, Monty Williams is really rich.
Oh my gosh, what a contract. Good for him. I'm happy for
him. Good for him. That's my cue. Former Suns head coach Monty Williams, he's agreed to a 6-year, $72 million deal to become the next head coach of the Pistons. I think you got to pay somebody a lot to live in Detroit. I think that's kind of part of the deal, right? Like we have to live in Detroit.
Who wants to live
in this hole?
We've got to overpay. He could stay living here and fly private every day to practice.
My goodness,
with that kind of
$72 million. Oh goodness. So I asked, did the Suns make the right move by firing Monty? Yes or no? I don't know, man. I think they probably did. I think he took them as far as he could. You know, I think a big part of it is they want to try and make DeAndre Ayton a player, and I think the guy's garbage. I think he is lazy. I think he doesn't care. I think he's the reason Monty Williams was fired. I can't stand DA when you got all the talent in the world and you don't even show it, or you don't show up, or you don't even jump for a rebound. Like, you're dead to me. I don't even want to know you. So I still think they probably made the right move, but can you even find a decent place to live in Detroit, even if you're making $72
million? I don't know how close to Detroit, but I know there are some places in Michigan that are beautiful. But I don't know how close to Detroit they are.
Yeah, it'd be like living in Cleveland. No one wants to live in Cleveland. Do you want to live in Cleveland?
I was born in Cleveland.
That's why. I don't want to live there.
I was born in Cleveland.
You ruined Cleveland for everybody all those years ago.
It was called the Mistake on the Lake.
That's right.
And the river caught on fire when I was a kid. There was so much pollution, the river caught on fire.
You were smart to get out of there.
Well, my parents took me out when I was a kid.
You were probably trying to do a radio show at about 1 year old, and you're like, I need to get out of here.
It's a cool city, though. I got to tell you, it's turned into a cool city. I was there for when Trump got nominated. The convention was in Cleveland, and they actually have done a great renaissance downtown. It's pretty cool in Cleveland now. Downtown Cleveland.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to keep Cleveland and Detroit off my travel list.
And fair enough. Well, yeah, weren't you just in Paris? I mean, you're at a different level now.
I was in Paris for a little while, yes.
Okay. Well,
thanks for making me feel bad now.
I think it's awesome. I'm envious. I love the travel. So thanks a lot. I love the question. And tomorrow will be our last day, short week. I like it.
It's beautiful. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, man. Thanks. That's Gatos. The BQ poll question today is brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers. What we're going to do just after 9 o'clock, we're going to go to Phoenix Police because they are aggressively going to hire. We're going to continue this compare and contrast, where we're going to talk about crime in other cities and how we're fighting ours here.